Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
There are technical issues. How do you make this safe and effective? But then there are ethical issues that have been raised. I mean, you're starting off with a technique meant to prevent devastating illness, but there are some people who worry that down the road it could be used to try to make so-called designer babies, kids who are more intelligent, who have other qualities that the parents find desirable. Now, I should say, we are way off technically from being able to do this, but that's the fear.
Thanks, Dr. John LaPook. He is the CBS medical correspondent trying to explain the basic concerns that some are expressing about a new form of in vitro fertilization currently being considered for approval by the Food and Drug Administration. It goes by a very long title, and when you read it, you think, I can't even understand what this is supposed to be about. This is about mitochondria and DNA, and then you toss in the issue of in vitro fertilization, a treatment for infertility. It might become a bit confusing. Why should we have ethical concerns at all about something we can't even understand? Sounds like you have to be a medical researcher to understand this stuff. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Wednesday afternoon. It's the 26th of February. Jennifer Law, president of the Center for Bioethics and Culture, joins us to talk about this new form of in vitro fertilization that the FDA is currently considering for approval. A little bit later, Craig Parton is going to join us. You might have heard about this. Proselytizing atheists, where the Baptists set up a booth, where the Roman Catholics set up a group booth, where the pro-life groups set up a booth, maybe at your local park, there may be an atheist booth as well, saying, you know, don't worry. Enjoy your life. There is no heaven. There is no hell. Why would atheists care? Why would they proselytize? We'll answer that question with Craig Parton a little bit later here on Issues Etc. Then Issues Etc. comment line. We'll respond to some of that and our listeners' email to round off the second hour of Issues Etc. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, or a tweet at Issues ETC. Jennifer Lawls, president of the Center for Bioethics and Culture. Jennifer, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Okay, this is what it's called. It's called oocyte modification in assisted reproduction for the prevention of transmission of mitochondrial disease or treatment of infertility. I know few people who could explain what that means. Why should anyone who can't have ethical concerns about what the FDA is considering today?
Well, I think everybody who's listening in knows that when a new baby is born, they get half of their genetic material from their mom, and then they get the other half from their father. So this is the first time ever we are considering creating a new life, a new baby, that will have the genetic material from three people, which is why sometimes you hear it referred to as the three-parent embryo. So I think just the fact that we are doing human experimentation on, you know, new young life, I often have to wonder, why would a mom and a dad want to subject their future child to really being the part of a brand new, never before done human experiment? What is the impact on a human being having genetic material from three people? And from when I've been on your show in the past, maybe people remember that a lot of my work is in the area of egg donation. I made a documentary film called Exploitation, and nobody is even considering the fact that we will need young, healthy women to provide their eggs to women that are having problems with their mitochondrial DNA, which is why we're doing this, because there's somebody who wants to have a healthy child. So we're taking something very natural, and we're doing some pretty scary things in the laboratory.
So the two concerns that we heard about there in the open, one, safety, just the basic concern, is this safe to do human experimentation this way? And then the second one has to do with kind of the medical ethical, not even if it were safe, should we do it? Am I outlining it well enough here, Jen?
Absolutely. So it's not even, you know, because a lot of the news is down the road, well, it might lead to cloning, it might lead to all this designer baby stuff where people are picking and choosing traits that they want their children to have. But I'm talking about the right here and now. We are talking about moving forward on science, a new technology that would create human beings that have the genetic material from three people. And then there are huge safety concerns with that because we've never done it before. And do parents who have this mitochondrial disease problem really want to subject their children to be human guinea pigs? And so that's what the FDA has to decide, is it, you know, because the FDA is all about proving safety, and that's when things are allowed to get the green light and move forward. And also the other element is nobody's talking about where these eggs, where the healthy eggs are going to come from to help the women who have an unhealthy egg. It's going to come from a young, healthy woman who's going to subject herself to risky drugs, risky procedures in order to provide eggs.
Now, let's talk about that, because I know in previous conversations with you on that subject, just the sheer numbers can sometimes, well, here's the picture that's painted in the in vitro community, and that is, you know, one young college student comes in, donates a couple eggs, and everything's fine, and it's done very efficiently, and no one is exploited in any of this. You say that the reality of egg donation, especially what would be required to do this kind of stuff, is far different. How would you describe it, Jennifer?
Well, you're getting back to the egg donor. I mean, and safety issues. The way we practice currently egg donation in the world is no one has ever once done one safety study. There's not one long-term safety study on young, healthy women who take these drugs and undergo the surgical procedure to remove her eggs to donate them, to say that it's safe. And in my work, I meet a lot of women who made the decision to sell their eggs. Most women don't do it for free, who have been harmed. And seriously harmed to the point where they've almost died, or they have died, or they have lost their ability to have a child of their own. So I think the safety threshold has never even been met for the young egg donor. So here we're doing a new technique that depends on the young, healthy egg donor to donate her eggs or sell her eggs. And that safety threshold has never been met.
Are we also talking about essentially kind of a global egg market, and especially the exploitation of third world women in this
industry?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I just got an email from a colleague of mine who sent me a news story in Nigeria where young adolescent, teenage girls are being paid about 50 euros, which isn't a whole lot of money, to sell their eggs for scientific research purposes. And, you know, you go on any fertility website, many of the big fertility websites in the United States will talk about how they're establishing their global egg banks. I mean, what are global egg banks going to be full of? They're going to be full of eggs from around the world. And when you get into research purposes like this technique, they're really going to heavily depend on poor women. Unlike right now, the fertility industries are heavily targeting the Ivy League, the Harvard, the Yale, the Stanford student because they want, you know, smart, pretty women. But at this research level for mitochondrial DNA research, they'll just need vats of eggs that will come largely from poor women around the world.
Let's talk about the aspect of this story that is probably getting into the headlines more often than these concerns, and that is the so-called prospect of designer babies, that this could lead to, not directly but indirectly, to the ability to genetically design offspring. What are your thoughts there?
Sure. I mean, we're already doing that at some level right now. It's called pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. I mean, that's why you see a lot of outrage with people that have babies with Down syndrome, you know, because we can target these embryos in the laboratory and select out. You know, so we're already selecting out for a lot of traits. We don't want a child that's a girl. We want a child that's a boy. We don't want a child that has Down syndrome. We want a healthy child. Pretty soon we'll be selecting for traits that, you know, we want to opt in. We want somebody with blue eyes. We want somebody that's going to be tall. We want somebody that's not going to be, that's not going to develop cancers or something. So, you know, the larger problem is that as these technologies just become more accepted and more mainstream, you know, one of the professors out in my backyard at Stanford said in 50 years, all babies are going to be made in the laboratory because nobody's going to want to leave anything to chance. And why wouldn't you want to give your child the best start on day one versus, you know, getting them into an Ivy League education or getting them into the elite preschool. You know, pretty soon it's going to start right there in the laboratory with, you know, getting that child off on the best start.
Now, I want to read to you something that was formed as kind of a Q&A in yesterday's, it's actually an updated version of yesterday's Washington Post, the headline, FDA considers controversial fertility procedure, what's at stake? Nita Faraday there wrote kind of a Q&A, and here's the eighth question. I want your response to her answer. The eighth question is, what about that slippery slope? She writes, as the FDA meetings proceed, you'll undoubtedly hear and read a lot of fear-mongering claims about opening the floodgates to designer perfect babies, or arguments that approving mitochondrial replacement will put society on the slippery slope toward dystopia. These concerns are overblown. How do you respond?
Well, I would just say that there's absolutely no brakes whatsoever on fertility medicine and reproductive technology in the United States. That's why we have organizations that are racing to develop their world egg banks. That's why we have, you know, a ever-growing, you know, multi-billion-dollar-a-year industry. I mean, they're predicting on the global market in about 5 years that this is going to be in the $20 billion range, you know, area. So to say that this is fear-mongering, I'd say, wait a minute, there are no breaks. I mean, you can pretty much just do about anything you want, anything your checkbook can buy here in the United States. I mean, I live in California. Can you say Octomom? Can you say Elton John came here twice to pay one woman for her eggs and one woman for her womb so he could have children, you know, as a gay same-sex married couple? It really is anything goes. So we're already at that point where the slippery slope is here. We're targeting, you know, babies based on sex, and nobody seems to mind. You know, they call it family balancing. We give all these nice little euphemistic terms. You know, I call prenatal genetic diagnosis is not anything diagnostic about it. It's called search and destroy. You know, let's find the embryos that we don't want and destroy them or use them for research purposes. So the slippery slope is alive and well and already here right now.
Okay. Do you have, it sounds like you don't have a lot of confidence in the current state of medical / research ethics when it comes to them getting their hands on human material, even on human beings, embryonic human beings?
No, I don't have a lot of confidence whatsoever, and I think that the evidence bears that out. I mean, that's why we have close to a million frozen embryos in the United States alone. I mean, that didn't just happen yesterday. I mean, that's because there's no brakes. There's no ethical reflection. You know, the ethics that are driving this is totally a utilitarian thing. I mean, mitochondrial DNA diseases might affect maybe 5,000 children born in the United States when we have 4 million born. I mean, we're talking about a very small population. And I'm not, I mean, I was a pediatric nurse, you know, I practiced nursing for over 20 years. So I'm not against science and technology. I'm not against finding cures for children that have dreadful diseases or parents that have genetic illnesses. But it's all about, how are we going to do it? Like you said earlier, just because we can do this, is this the road that we want to go down? I don't want to go down a road that just continues to make human life and treat it like chattel and throws one away or picks one over the other because of, you know whatever's in vogue today.
So with only a minute here, Jennifer, how would you summarize your concerns about this new form of in vitro fertilization currently being considered for approval by the FDA? About a minute.
Yeah. My two points remain that I'm concerned about. We've never before created children that have the genetic material from three people, and that is human experimentation, and that nobody is even raising any ounce of concern whatsoever about the young women who will be needed to provide their eggs, their healthy eggs for this research to advance.
Jennifer Lawless, president of the Center for Bioethics and Culture. You will find a link to the Center for Bioethics and Culture at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Jennifer, thank you very much for being our guest.
My pleasure. Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time talking with Craig Parton about atheists that are proselytizing. I'd say evangelizing, but they don't have a gospel. But they are proselytizing. We'll be right back. Slip sliding away. You know the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. Does God work through children to help others? Do children have a vocation? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February is How Can I Help? God's Calling for Kids. It's a great book for children ages 4 through 8 and only costs $7.99. How Can I Help? Is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can check out How Can I Help? God's Calling for Children at issuesetc.org.
Folks attending last year's Making the Case Conference absolutely loved the barbecue from Randy's House of Barbecue in Troy and Highland, Illinois. The pork, chicken, ribs, and beef are prepared just like the old days in a pit cooked over hickory, apple, and wild cherry wood. Randy's House of Barbecue, Route 40 and Troy O'Fallon Road in Troy, and at 2649 Northtown Way in Highland. Randy's House of Barbecue, randysbbq.com.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Does your church need a backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.